That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to another bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. Do you remember that piece that I did? It might have been a long read. It might not have been. About the economics of Spotify and music streaming generally and how the way things are structured right now, there's no way for a, quote, middle-class artist to thrive. If you pay your $10 a month to Spotify, some percentage of that is going to Justin Bieber, whether you listen to him or not. That piece really stuck with me because of the implications it had for artists generally as we move to this subscription for everything future. So I called up The Ringer's Victor Luckerson, who wrote the piece, to talk about this, because there are a lot of reasons why the current model could and should be improved. Aside from the economics, there are also questions of play fraud and even how music itself might be getting warped by these incentives. But first,
I'm going to a big AI startup demo day here in the city tomorrow, and I will 100% be decked out in Mack Weldon clothing. Why? Well, Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. That's their AirKnit underwear. Crazy, comfortable, but elevated sweatpants, the Ace Collection. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads, the Silver Peak Polo. That's my personal fave. And ultra-soft antimicrobial tees for when you need to stay fresh longer. Their silver crewneck t-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code RIDE. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code RIDE. How do you make a password that's strong enough so no one will guess it, and it's impossible for you to forget, and do it for 100 different sites, and make it so everyone in your company can do the same without ever needing to reset them? Sounds impossible unless you have 1Password. More than any other product I've ever told you about, I can vouch 1,000% for 1Password. I can't live without it. 1Password makes strong security easy for your people and gives you the visibility you need to take action when you need to. Any device, anytime, 1Password lets you securely switch between iPhone, Android, Mac, and PC with convenient features like autofill for quick sign-ins. All you have to remember is the one strong account password that protects everything else. Your logins, your credit cards, secure notes, or the office Wi-Fi password. 1Password's award-winning password manager is trusted by millions of users and over 100,000 businesses from IBM to Slack. It beat out 40 other options to become Wirecutter's top pick for password managers. Right now, my listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/ride for your growing business. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/ride. Don't let security slow your business down. Go to 1Password.com/ride.
Okay, let's talk about the economics of music streaming with The Ringer's Victor Luckerson. This piece that you did, I think I did it on the show a couple weeks ago about the basic economics of Spotify, really stuck in my head. Let's stick with the basics in terms of, as you say in the piece, I think I knew this, but I think most people are surprised about how Spotify actually works in terms of how artists get paid. So let's do basics first. If I pay my $10 or whatever a month, and over the course of that month, I only play, say, Morrissey songs or something, my whole $10 or even whatever the percentage of it, it doesn't all go to Morrissey, right?
Yeah, that's right. So first off, the artists are gonna get about 70% of the $10, but it's not necessarily gonna be for the people that you listen to, because Spotify essentially puts all the streams of everybody into one big pot, and then the artists get their share of the total streams. So if you listen to Spotify a lot during the course of a month, then you're going to be contributing more money to artists than other subscribers. You don't use the service as often as you do.
Well, that's the other wrinkle of it. So if I listen not at all, not even a second, but I'm still paying my $10. So then the $10, how does that get divvied up? The $7 after Spotify's cut, that gets divvied up based on the most popular streams that month?
That's exactly right. So really your $10 is just going towards a gigantic pot of money for all of the artists. And then whether you listen to a single song or not, somebody's still going to get that money. So that's going to make it so that the artists who are able to attract the most repeat streams again and again, I'm going to be making more money than artists who don't get as many streams, sort of regardless of whether or not people like either artist more, basically.
Right. So even if I've never listened to Justin Bieber in my life, every month, chances are some pennies of mine are going to Justin Bieber.
That is very, very likely, because he's really good at getting a lot of streams on Spotify.
Yeah, actually, we're gonna come to that in a second. So in your piece, you spoke to one of these what you call middle class artists that is very vocal about how this sort of economics is unfair to what you termed as the musical middle class. I think we're familiar with the idea because we've seen headlines for years. This artist said that there were 2 million streams for a combined total of 190,000 hours, and she only received $12,000, or about a half a penny a stream. I think we understand that, but how does, if she's describing herself as a middle class musical artist, how is that harming her in the sense that she's not getting a big enough slice of the pie?
Yeah, that's kind of the idea. For somebody like Zoe Keating, who is this avant-garde cellist who lives in Vermont, she might have fans who don't necessarily stream her songs on repeat as often. She's creating these sort of like moody instrumentals that you're not going to necessarily play as often as you would play like the latest Justin Bieber pop song, for example. The songs are also longer. Her songs are like 5 to 7, maybe even 8 minutes long. So just the fact that it takes you twice as long to play the song means she's getting half as much money essentially as you would if you played the Bieber song twice. So there's a lot of different factors that sort of make it so that it's likely that if we were going to a different model where my money went to the only artist that I listen to, she could very well end up better off.
Right. So describe that model. It's, I believe, a couple maybe overseas streaming services have moved to this model. But basically, it would be almost exactly what we're describing where if I listen to only Morrissey gets my $7.
That's exactly right. So right now they need a catchier term for it, but right now the industry is calling this the user centric model. And the idea is just what you said, that my $10 per month would be distributed among only the artists that I listen to. So essentially Spotify or whatever service would sort of keep track of your royalties going to each individual artist instead of having a gigantic royalty pool that the artists all pull from.
Do we know why originally in streaming it was this model where it's only, you're only counting streams as opposed to that divvying up the money in this user-friendly way?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, the way it currently is much simpler for Spotify, because if we go to the user-centric model, they sort of have to track a different royalty output for each individual user and each individual artist. Whereas right now, they really only have to do that for the artist. So I think one thing, it might have been a much simpler proposition logistically with the current model. And Spotify actually claims that there would be so much of a burden to switch into this model in terms of the logistics that the money they would have to spend on that would lower the amount of money they were able to give out. So then middle class artists might not end up making any more money anyway.
Well, and as you alluded to in the piece, there's a little, I personally call BS on that, because listen, the ability to do analytics on these platforms, the idea that they couldn't keep track and slice and dice the data that granularly is complete BS to me. And then also in your piece, you pointed out that like they're able to, at their year end, sort of like, this is what happened on Spotify over the course of the year. They're able to give you that data if they want to.
Right, right. Yeah, actually, Zoe Keating used to work in tech in San Francisco before she became a full-time musician. And her response was, that's kind of what computers are for, to be able to calculate these kind of things. So I think I definitely agree that if they really wanted to, they could. And the fact that other services are considering it or plan to implement it means it's definitely something that's technically feasible.
And to be clear, do we know that all of the streaming services, they all use the same, you know, penny per stream model, like Apple Music does as well?
Yeah, all the mainstream ones have adopted this similar model. And there's also sort of talk about, well, if one streaming service does it differently, that's going to just create more like logistical headaches when you have different services that are paying in different ways. So there's that sort of an argument too, that the industry needs to sort of be in lockstep. So if they're going to switch, it needs to all be done at once versus having one service try to do it by themselves.
Okay, well, let's get into that. The idea that you could switch to this different model that might cause for less income inequality. So if you're a big star, say a Drake, are you making big money off of streaming, or is, like, I'm sure Drake is making millions of dollars, but I would imagine he makes more millions of dollars off of touring. You know, that's the whole thing. Is being on streaming platforms for an artist like Drake, is that a loss leader, or is that a significant revenue stream that they wouldn't want to not give up, but like minimize in any way?
I think it's actually something that's kind of in transition, because, you know, I guess when streaming first came out, it was sort of seen as more like the wave of the future or something that artists needed to do to be able to attract young people. But it's grown so quickly, and the industry as a whole, like recording music, has sort of turned around and actually started growing in revenue in the last 3 to 4 years after 15 years of decline because of piracy. So we're kind of seeing a transition where streaming was at one point sort of this loss leader type thing, like you're saying, but now it's actually becoming very central to the industry. And there are actually projections that in the 2020s sometime, like, the streaming version of the industry will be just as big as the 90s version of the industry was, the CD era. So for artists like Drake, for example, they're going to really want to make sure that whatever the model is, it's going to benefit them, because this is going to become a bigger and bigger portion of their revenue pie as time goes on.
Yeah, I've seen those graphs too, that looks like the dream of the 90s is still alive in streaming. But
right.
But you raised an interesting point. So, you know, even Spotify famously loses money still. And so the smaller artists aren't making that much money. So is it really the bottom line is that the people that are doing well in streaming rising to the fore are the record companies, because once again, their revenue stream is coming back in a meaningful way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And they also own stakes in Spotify. So whether or not Spotify, the company itself, is making money, it's still worth X billion dollars right now. And the record companies bought in 10 years ago when it was worth nothing. So they've actually made a lot of money. And there's actually been debate about whether or not the artists themselves deserve some of that stake, because obviously they're the ones who have built Spotify into this really valuable platform. So I would definitely say the record companies are going to make out the best for sure. And then you sort of have the mega artists who benefit a lot from the way a platform like Spotify is designed, with the playlist sort of guiding you to their hits. Like when Drake's last album came out, like it was basically like Spotify became like a Scorpion app, basically, in terms of the promotion for the album. So like for big artists, like Spotify can be really, really beneficial too. And I think one reason that people like Zoe Keating really interested in this new model is because they're trying to figure out, okay, if the record labels are going to win and the big artists are going to win, how can I as an independent person also start generating money sort of in this new paradigm?
So if we are going to move to a new paradigm, you said in the piece that the artists have to collectively get together and push for it. But that makes me wonder, like, who would be the one with the most to lose if the current model goes away? Would it be the record companies? Would it be Spotify? Or would it be big artists like Drake or all three?
So the exact details are actually difficult to predict. Like, there's been some studies. There's a study in Finland actually that said that under the current model, basically the top half of a percent of tracks get about 10% of the money. And if we switch to the user-centric model, then those tracks would only get about 5% of the money. But you don't necessarily know whether the extra money is going to, let's say, like Drake's back catalog or to people like Zoe Keating. So you kind of have to actually implement the model at scale to figure that out. So that's kind of up in the air. But I would say that Spotify would not benefit because there would be less incentive for people to, like, create extra accounts on Spotify to try to generate streams or that kind of thing. And also the company would have to do like a more, they'd have to revamp their entire royalty system, which would cost some amount of expense for them. So I think as an industry leader, they have very little incentive to want to change this unless there is a lot of activism about it from artists or artists pressuring labels to do it.
Well, or maybe even from fans so that I don't have to give any pennies to Justin Bieber. But you mentioned two things real quick before we end. In the existing model, there are reasons to shift to a different model because, number one, there are examples of fraud. Like, if it's a pay-per-stream sort of thing, you can set up bots. This is actually SoundCloud more, where you can pay for, you know, plays and things like that. But if it weren't, the incentive for the industry to change their analytics would actually be for better accountability. So you couldn't just have these things where, you know, I set up a bot that plays my song a million times or whatever, and then just basically it's like ad fraud, but for song plays.
Yeah, no, exactly. One of the sources I interviewed for my story compared it directly to ad fraud and sort of talking about how, yeah, if you just want to set up an account right now, pay $10 a month and stream 24/7, you're likely not going to be stopped. Like, Spotify has some fraud tracking technologies, but as we both know, ad fraud is still widely existent. And there was this incident, I guess, a couple years ago where someone was able to generate $1 million in royalties in Bulgaria by setting up 1,200 dummy accounts, basically. So, I mean, I think that there's not really a way to get rid of that problem unless you change the incentive structure.
And then lastly, I did a piece, I think it was last week, a different piece than yours, about how the length of songs is actually getting shorter because artists are incentivized, again, to go for this, the more plays, the more pennies. And so it's sort of, the analogy I made is, you know, if you release a 3-hour epic movie, it can only play in a theater so many times a day. But if you release a nice 90-minute movie, it can play more times a day. So it's sort of, the current model is warping the very nature of the music business at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a really fascinating insight. I think you see that especially in hip-hop with a lot of the artists who sort of started on SoundCloud. A lot of these current pop hits from them are like even under 3 minutes. And for those kind of people, those kind of artists, like, they're going to be making more money that way. So it's definitely not only a sort of issue of fairness or even sort of like wanting to support the artists you like, but it also is actually like affecting the music you get to listen to.
Well, I also said last week that, you know, as technology evolves, that changes how the music is. Back in the 50s, you could only put 3 minutes of music on a side of a single, and then when you had albums, then it became you put 10 songs on there or whatever. So, do you think that, final question, do you think that, and this is totally a judgment call, do you think that we'd get better music if we switched to this sort of user-friendly model in the way that it would be almost realigning the audience with the interests of the artists that they actually care about most?
Yeah, I mean, I think it creates, it at least at the very least, it removes negative incentives for people to make either songs that are short just to be streamed a lot or to make just songs that are going to be put on repeat in like coffee shops or boutique stores, which is often like kind of boring music. So I think at the very least, it sort of, it removes negative incentives and it could create a situation where fans feel a little bit more sort of motivated or they feel a little more direct connection between what they're doing on Spotify and supporting artists and maybe kind of getting back to that sense of my music consumption is actually part of my fandom and not just an all-you-can-listen-to buffet that I happen to pay for every month.